College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nonstop rain music for nonstop rain. Although it looks like it stops raining. Jeremy and Joe. Joe's out this week. He's back Tuesday. No show on Memorial Day. I'm on vacation next week, so my getaway hour. Ian Harditz joining me on the Wester Hotline. Ian Harditz of Matthew Berry's Fantasy Life. Ian, good morning. Thanks for taking some time today.
Good morning, man. Appreciate you having me. Where's vacation for you next week?
Actually going to take a little trip to Boston, doing some golfing out that way, seeing some family. So, yeah, getting on the road and going to the Boston area for a bit.
Hey, I spent last weekend in Lexington on a golf trip of my own, so shoot low, man.
I'll do my best. Just went through the odyssey of getting fit and get a new driver. So it's debuting on this trip, which, you know how that works, Ian. High hopes and results? Well, we'll see. It's like a fantasy draft. You know, you go in feeling great, you come out of it, who knows? That's golf.
That's about how it goes. And NFL draft grades as well. You know, yeah, we'll find out the real story in about 3 years, but yeah. That's not going to stop us from getting excited right now.
That's right. Ian's doing NFL team previews, saw your Bills preview, and, you know, I'm going to go with good news, bad news, Ian, because you like the Bills to maybe win the Super Bowl, which we love, but we also love being underdogs, and so do the Bills love being underdogs, and here they are favored in every game this season as we hit May 23rd. Favored in every game and right back, you know, expected to go to the mountaintop or bust, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of these things where, again, if you just showed someone, you know, maybe they've been in a coma the last 5 years and you can't show them the Super Bowl champ, but you just show them all the statistics from this last half decade. I mean, how could the Bills not have won one by this point? But I know you guys know that all too well. But it is just wild to me that, again, they literally lead the NFL in points per game over the past 5 years while simultaneously allowing the fewest points per game on defense. So, again, I know they keep running into these buzzsaws in the form of the Chiefs in the playoffs, but we've seen them get the regular season wins. I think some of the roster additions, Josh Palmer, like, okay, they're not completely, you know, blowing you out of the water. They didn't give anyone $100 million or anything, but they added the route running maven. They got some extra depth on the defensive line. And again, they weren't that far away to begin with. So at some point, I do think number 17 is going to have what it takes. Again, we've seen it in stretches. So why not this year?
Yeah, I think Bills fans have a similar mindset. Like, eventually, they'll get it done with Josh. He's not yet 30. You know, in one way I like to frame it, sometimes we're talking about them fixing their defense. Sometimes it's about pieces on offense. And it's about the missing 4 points. Should they be aiming for four more or trying to keep the Chiefs from scoring four less, basically? And if we start with the offense, you know, you wrote up a preview about their fantasy outlook and Shakir, who came on last season. Kincaid and Coleman are both names that are high-profile guys that we're kind of waiting to see break out. Let's start with Coleman. We spent last hour talking a lot about him because while there are some things maybe missing in his game, there are lots of things that maybe the Bills can I guess, glow up and bring about more for him. I'm wondering if there's more schemed looks for him this season in year two.
Yeah, honestly, I was really surprised with how good he was after the catch. I mean, if anyone checked out his highlight film from Florida State, I mean, you saw all the contested catches, jumping over dudes, mossing them and all that. So, you know, seeing him do that same thing, that deep bomb against Detroit, you know, against the Jets in the end zone, did something similar. So that wasn't overly surprising. But, man, the way he's able to take that slant against the Titans for 60-plus yards, you know, really was showing out against the Seahawks. Just one of the more unfortunate injuries of the year because it did really seem like he was coming on week 7 and 8 before he had that injury against the Dolphins. But overall, anyway, you know, going back to yards after the catch point, Next Gen Stats has a cool little, you know, metric where they basically kind of judge how many yards after the catch was each player going to get per reception, how many they actually get, so you can have a nice plus-minus. And Keon Coleman led all wide receivers in the NFL in this yards after the catch above expected metric last season, and just really good company when you look at the other wide receivers to do so since 2018. DJ Moore, A.J. Brown, Debo Samuel, Jalen Waddle. I mean, I understand Keon not necessarily playing like those guys, but the fact that he might have two trump cards in his, you know, toolkit in terms of that, again, Boston dude's ability, and then also getting going after the catch. Hey, I'm not saying that he's going to be, you know, the next Diggs ripping off 1,100, 1,200 yards per year and everything, but, you know, there was a time where Gabe Davis could go out there and, you know, be this boom or bust, you know, touchdown-dependent guy, and I do think that, you know, Keon is a more talented version potentially of that. So, you know, my bold fantasy prediction, at least for the Bills this year, is that Keon will find his way into the end zone double-digit times.
Ian Harditz, Fantasy Life, joining us here on WGR Sports Radio 550 on our Wester Hotline. How about for Kincaid? He's the other kind of elusive thing for the Bills. I don't think anybody here, I shouldn't say that. Like, he's kind of maybe fallen on a little bit of hard times after that drop against the Chiefs on the kind of Hail Mary from Josh Allen. But he's shown to have good hands. He got here right away and was all about how smooth things were. And then it became a bit of a mixed bag, a change in offensive coordinator, an offense trying to find its way. And when it did find its way, it was more in a everybody gets the ball kind of thing as opposed to exploit the tight end matchup nightmare that maybe he was sold to be. Where do you feel like Kincaid fits in with this offensive game plan?
It's one of these things where it usually takes tight ends a while to get going in the NFL. I mean, Brock Bowers and Sam Laporta in recent years have spoiled us a little bit, but it is the position where, you know, normally it's not surprising at all when it takes guys 3-4 years. And Kincaid, I mean, hey, guy still is only 25 years old himself, but when you are that first-round pick, when you're being called, you know, Josh Allen's new version of Travis Kelce, you know, they say comparison is the thief of joy for a reason. So I don't think Kincaid has been horrible by any stretch, but again, just such an ill-timed drop, obviously, in the playoffs, something that the Ravens fans and Mark Andrews certainly knows all about as well. And just looking back, I mean, just it was funny. I, you know, was kind of being a little bit mean on the old Twitter sphere. Not mean, but just annoying, I guess you could say, where I said, Dalton Kincaid career highlights. You know, it was just the one play against the Lions where he caught the ball and then pointed at the couple guys on the ground. I understand he caught a nice seam pass against the Patriots a couple years ago, but I feel like through 2 years you have a first-round tight end, and it's just so hard to even come up with these big plays that he's even been able to make. So really has been more of a, you know, I would say just factor of what Josh Allen's been able to do. The fact that he hasn't been able to separate from Dawson Knox hasn't been ideal, especially in fantasy land where we're more concerned about counting numbers and efficiency. But all that to say, there have been some underlying signs that, you know, better days could be ahead, specifically in terms of his ability to just earn a lot of targets when he is out there. Was actually the second best tight end last year in targets per route run, and also turned in top 10 marks in PFF receiving grade and yards per route run. So again, we don't have the huge counting numbers, but he also was playing through those shoulder and knee injuries. And I do think we, as a, you know, football fans, have a tendency where a guy's banged up, he's questionable on the injury report. Yeah, very tuned into it. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Once these guys do start playing through that pain, we kind of forget about it and maybe don't realize that, yes, they are, in fact, still operating at less than 100%. So, again, I think just expecting Kincaid, this time last year, we were hoping and thinking he'd be, like, the number one pass game option in this offense. Not so sure we're exactly going to get there, but, hey, if Kincaid, you're number three behind Shakur, and hopefully Keon takes his big next step, I still think that's a useful piece and a good passing game.
Ian Harditz of My Fantasy Life, online at fantasylife.com. Matthew Berry's Fantasy Life, sorry. Ian, let's talk dynasty drafts. You know, we've got our Bills chatter in. Are you feeling locked in on one is locked? Everybody knows Ashton G&T's number one.
Yeah.
2, 3, 4. Are you changing every day? Are you feeling like that is a safe spot? Is there a tier? Because you know, I feel like Travis Hunter is a conversation. I hear the Tet McMillan conversation and how good of a fit that is. Amarian Hampton and the Chargers. Like, where do you feel comfortable for a dynasty rookie draft? What numbers are you feeling comfortable to lock in, if anything, after one?
I think it is just one. I mean, honestly, if you're in a super flex league where you can start multiple quarterbacks, I think Cam Ward comes into play at that number two pick as well. So you listed the main hitters. I would prioritize McMillan and Hunter, all things equal. Now, look, if you're on a squad where you already have a great wide receiver room, it's going to be even a struggle to get these guys in there. You're trying to win today. Then I think Hampton is someone where we can say, okay, we're going to get 4 or 5 years at a minimum inside this Jim Harbaugh, Greg Roman run first Chargers offense. That's tough to be too disappointed about. about. But just historically, we see wide receivers have a longer lifespan in the NFL overall, and then also as really high-end fantasy football assets. So, again, Jenty, number one, easy. If I had just a pretty balanced team all the way around, I would lean toward Travis Hunter next, and then Tim McMillan, and then Hampton, because, man, while there might not be, you know, another running back like Jenty, who's a complete slam dunk, Hampton, next best thing with that first-round draft capital, good offense. I mean, you look at the Ohio State running backs and Henderson and Judkins, and even some of these guys going closer to round two, R.J. Harvey with the Broncos, Caleb Johnson with the Steelers, you know, hoping to be Arthur Smith's poor man version of Derrick Henry running that outside zone. I mean, there is a reason why, you know, we spent all April hearing from these draft analysts about how deep of a running back class this is. And accordingly, I do think there are some pretty quality options, you know, going into round two. But last point I would just make is, again, outside those top five picks, I've been surprised in some of my own personal drafts to see how far Colston Loveland and Tyler Warren have fallen, even in leagues that are tight end premium, where you're getting an extra half point every time your tight end catches the ball. So Colston Loveland in particular is someone where, yeah, maybe year one things start out a little slow. It is a crowded offense. Cole Kmet's making $50 million. He's going to be out there in a similar manner as kind of Dawson Knox doing stuff from Dalton Kincaid. But with Loveland and just everything he was able to do in a Michigan offense that really could barely throw a forward pass last season, I mean, really is an impressive player. Got that top 10 draft capital. And, hey, being attached to Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson for the next potential decade, he's someone who on my tight end needy squad that I've actually traded up for and gone out of my way.
Who would you trust more for fantasy purposes? There's two teams here that jump out at me. You mentioned the Bears and Ben Johnson, Caleb Williams. Would you trust the Bears more or the Jags more? They make the change. They've got Trevor Lawrence and Brian Thomas and just mentioned Travis Hunter. Which of those two teams, Jags and Bears, that is supposed to probably bounce back offensively and maybe be a wagon if it all goes well, who would you trust more?
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to lean towards the Bears, but it's a great question because these really are similar teams. They each got that OC wonder kid, Liam Cohen and Ben Johnson, coming to save the day for their quote-unquote generational quarterback who really has looked anything but during their short time in the NFL. But just with the Bears, okay, it was cool getting Luther Burden in and everything. Colston Loveland has another dimension. But for them to beef up the offensive line the way they did is, you know, what gives me a bit more encouragement over the Jaguars, who I still do have that question mark there. Also, let's face it, Caleb Williams has spent a little bit less time being a bad NFL quarterback than Trevor Lawrence. So give me the Bears. You know, scary. This is their, what, third or fourth straight offseason championship banner they get to hang up over there. So I understand the expectations haven't gone great recently. But, again, enough things have gone right from the scheme, from the offensive line, to, again, even solidifying the pass catchers group that I do think we'll see Caleb Williams, you know, maybe not be a top five fantasy quarterback, but at least grace that top 10-12.
Ian Harditz on the Western Hotline. Ian, thanks again for the time, and, you know, enjoy Memorial Day weekend.
You too, man. Take care.
All right. Ian Harditz, you can find him at Fantasy Life, Matthew Berry's Fantasy Life. Great work. Find him on Twitter as well, at iHarditz. Love Ian's work. That 2-3-4 in Dynasty rookie drafts, I have a league where I'm picking 2 and 3. I basically did a bunch of Brian Burke-style trades. Remember when Brian Burke traded up for the Sedins? I did all that to get up to 2 and 3 because you can't get to 1. So I won 2 in the lottery and then had 6 and moved to 4 and then moved to 3. And I think I moved up like 3 times. Anyway, I have 2 and 3. And Travis Hunter and Omarion Hampton, I think, are going to be the choices, but I don't know. Anyway, 803-0550. Had a lot of good calls and some thoughts on Keon Coleman there. If you want to jump in on that, you can. Appears to not be raining. I'm going to tell you guys a quick story here. Yesterday, I had to ride my bike in the rain, which, as it was happening, I thought, I saw another person on their bike riding by me in the rain, and they went jing jing like that, like a little high, like a Jeep thing. And I thought, that only happens because it's raining, and he knows. Like, anybody riding their bike in the rain, you know, maybe you have to do it to get to work or something, that's fine. I was just not, clearly not doing that. No rain gear, just, you know, I put on a jacket and I was riding my bike in the rain. I had to. If you're riding your bike in the rain, something has gone wrong for you
Or you started riding your bike and then
and it started raining. Well, that's gone wrong for you. You were hoping that didn't happen. Because it's not so much, it was a light rain at the time. It's not so much the rain, it's the wheel, your tire, firing water at your back the whole time. If you don't have one of those shields on it.
When I went to college, there was a kid on campus that had one of those e-bikes, like the very first e-bikes.
Yeah.
And I saw him one day without the shield on the back, and his jacket was just soaked. Oh. The next day I saw him, he had the little fender.
It's like parting the Red Sea on the sidewalk.
The fender's huge. So I ride my bike in the rain. I had one of those things where my brain went to playing a video game that has 10 side missions and having to do 10 things at once because I had to do this yesterday. So my truck is getting work done. My truck's at Z-Bart getting a new tonneau cover. And my wife's downtown, and she calls me and says, I have a flat tire. All right. So she has a flat tire, and we have things we need to do. The kids are at my mother-in-law. We're going to get the kids. We're supposed to go away on a trip soon. We have a flat tire. I don't have a car. What am I going to do? So I ride my bike in the rain to my mother-in-law's, get my mother-in-law's car, go down to where the flat tire is with my wife, meet them there, meet AAA, get the tire changed, take the car to the car place. All this happening, all in the rain, nonstop in the rain. And everything was fine. It ends up being a little case of when bad luck is good luck, where simply if someone said, like, I got a flat tire, you'd say, like, oh, that's bad luck. Like, oh, sorry about that. Sorry that happened, right? We were supposed to drive across the state today. So the tire going the day before a big trip, I think is good luck. Thank you.
100%.
For not blowing out today on the thruway in, you know, I mean, which exit do I want to pick here? 45, you know, exit. If it had blown out in one of those Rochester 17-mile stretches between exits, like, thank you for not doing that. It blew out instead just in downtown Buffalo and got the tire changed. So
that was always my biggest fear.
Blowing out a tire?
In my, like, big cross-country drives down to, like, Albuquerque or Des Moines when I was playing hockey.
Oh, in the middle of nowhere?
Oh.
Yeah.
There were some stretches going down to New Mexico where you're driving through, like, New Mexico itself, barren. There's nothing. It's just desert for as far as you can see. And I drove this old, like, a Nissan Pathfinder that was a monster. Never had a single problem. But every morning waking up in whatever motel I stayed in on the way, I was just, please, please do not blow a gasket or blow a tire off. And I'll have to change this tire in the middle of Lincoln, Nebraska.
So
it's crazy.
One of the longest drives. I have a cousin that lives in Melbourne, and yes, that's how you say it, Australia. Melbourne, not Melbourne, but Melbourne. I say it that way because he lives there. That's what they say. You can drive across Australia from Melbourne to Perth. Perth's on the west coast, and it's a 36-hour drive. You think there's nothing in the middle of the U.S., like you're driving to Albuquerque, you're in the middle of nowhere. Australia, you need to bring extra gas because there are maybe enough gas stations along the way, but you really could be in trouble, like more trouble than anywhere here.
You're going to get got by dingoes.
Who knows?
Kangaroos and all kinds of junk out there.
Who knows? One of the places I think about driving where you're like, wow, this is a pretty intense atmosphere. Driving from L.A. to Vegas in the summer, there are signs up that say, like, if your car starts to overheat, you know, you know to open up the vents and turn the heat on in your car. Or just let the vent, let it vent out the engine heat to you. When it's 100 degrees to begin with, or else your engine will overheat and your car will stall out and it'd be bad.
That almost happened to my college roommates in Death Valley.
Really?
They went to Death Valley like before our senior year, and like they came back, we all like moved back in. I was like, oh, like how was your guys' trip? They were like, oh, we almost died. Like there was one day they were just driving along and their car just quit and they had to just wait there for somebody to drive by. It took them 2 hours to wait for someone to
see a person.
By. Yeah,
that's...
and then it took them like 5 more hours to wait for the tow truck, and they didn't have cell service, so like they were just kind of stuck there. And eventually, the sun went down, so it kind of cooled down a little bit. But cool in Death Valley is like 80 degrees.
Yeah,
so it's pretty scary.
There's some gnarly, like I driving through Colorado in the first leg of that New Mexico trip. The mountains up there with no guardrails and little two-lane roads.
Yeah,
that is no joke. Like, you have an 8-hour day of driving, and like that's your last hour. Whew.
Yeah, I always like driving through, like out in the Southwest. You're driving down this secondary highway, not exactly an interstate, and there'll just be a driveway that goes off it, up into the, you know, into the hill, into the bush, and you're thinking like, I wonder where that goes. Wonder what's at the end of that.
It's like a 45-degree.
You're not going to find out. I don't know. It's just a dirt road, just like a house. I don't know.
Some True Detective stuff.
Right, right. I'm not going to find out. Anyway. So, yeah, we're traveling a little bit today. Do some Boston tour. I've been to Boston in a while. So, going to Boston, seeing some family. The weather there. I check the weather for tomorrow. Because tomorrow is the national. So, tomorrow 4:30 is the Bandits NLL Finals. Tomorrow, I guess it's a lacrosse fan's dream. You've got the actual college finals at 12 and 2:30. Syracuse plays Maryland at 2:30, and then the Bandits play. Let me check the weather for that game because it's at Gillette, and we gave some talk to some consideration to going. Would you be surprised? Would you be embarrassed for me if I said to you that I went to Syracuse for 4 years? And when the Syracuse lacrosse team gets into the Final Four, all the time, when they do, you know, somewhat regularly or win titles, I watch those games. Would you be embarrassed for me or shocked to find out that when I was at Syracuse for 4 years, I never went to a single lacrosse game? I did not go to one.
I mean, it's a busy time of year.
Spring?
Yeah.
Maybe.
You never know what you're doing. There's other stuff going on. You got, you know.
I feel like I probably should have gone to a couple lacrosse games. Yeah, maybe. Probably. I never did. I went to basketball. I went to football. I never went to a lacrosse game.
Make up for it this weekend.
I might. I'm talking about it. Although that means going to Gillette. I have not seen a game at Gillette. I've been to Gillette and gone through like the Patriots Hall of Fame. I had time to burn there with one of my college roommates once, so walked around Patriot Place, did all that kind of stuff. Anyway, 803-0550, our phone number. When we return, Gene Battaglia on the Amherst, who are playing for their season tonight. He tweeted out a little bit ago, a couple weeks ago, hey, Buffalo, enjoy Devin Levi. He's ready. So I wanted to follow up with him on that. The idea that Levi is fully cooked, fully done here. He's not at a great series, but that Levi should be ready to come to the Buffalo Sabres. We'll get Gene Battaglia's thoughts on that when we return. It's coming up here on WGR.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.